This is the JLPT Bootcamp Podcast with your host, Mac. This is episode 116 of the podcast, and this is
JLPT Bootcamp, the ultimate guide to passing the JLPT in less time with less pain.
For the JLPT, what's working, what's not working, and giving you some advice to hopefully, so you can avoid the mistakes that I make and do the good stuff that I do occasionally. I do one of these a month, and the other podcast once a month is a special cultural episode. So, but anyway, I podcasted a little bit about, I wrote a blog article about a month ago about studying kanji individually. And this is, it's pretty common practice if you use Heisig. Heisig kind of walks you through the kanji one by one, and you study the kanji pretty much in isolation. Just here's the character, here's the pronunciations, the onyomi and the kunyomi, and here's the strokes and how to make it and things. And it's pretty much, you know, it seems like common knowledge to just study them individually. And so I guess for N5, N4, I didn't. Starting at N3 level, I started to kind of study just to get a background, just to, because I knew a lot of the kanji, but I wanted to kind of just familiarize myself with all of the kanji. So I knew the differences. I knew, I wasn't going to get fooled on the test by different kinds of kanji that have similar radicals in them. But it got a little boring for me. I completed all the N1 kanji, and I was just reviewing, but I kind of found myself getting stuck in a loop where I would get the same kanji wrong by not selecting the right pronunciation or whatnot, or I'd forget one of the five pronunciations for a kanji, and it started to kind of drive me nuts because mnemonics don't start to kind of break down at that level where you're trying to remember five or six different pronunciations for one particular kanji, and there's not enough. I see the kanji, but I haven't seen it in a word, so I can't really visualize it. I can't place it anywhere. And it was just kind of driving me nuts because it was like, well, I'm reviewing this. I know what it means, but I haven't really seen it in all my reading. So why do I keep studying it? And I was just spending way too much time reviewing. I would say it was a good at least 20 minutes or 30 minutes a day reviewing kanji, which is ridiculous. I want to be using the language, not drilling it for 20 minutes a day. And so kind of ended up dropping that. I mean, on top of that, the iKanji app, which is a really good app for iPhone, it's really well designed for someone who wants to study a handful of kanji that they're having trouble with. But if you are looking for something that's comprehensive to study all the kanji for one of the higher levels, like N3, N2, and N1, it's probably not as useful, mostly because it didn't have any way of counting down. So when you started the review process, you didn't know how many more kanji you had to practice until you were finished for the day. So that's a little demotivating in my experience when you don't know when you're going to finish. So you're trying to get it finished, and you're doing it between breaks or when you have free time, and it's just becomes hectic. And in some days I have, it seems like I had a lot more to do, and then other days it was pretty light, and so I just ended up dropping it. Not completely. What I'll probably end up doing is I want to kind of change up things. After writing about my experience last month, a few readers mentioned that you rarely study kanji individually, but instead get used to kanji by reading and doing a lot of reading, which I have been doing. I've read a lot of past tests and reading a lot of blogs online and things, and so I'm pretty much used to all the common kanji. It's mostly just the rare kind of kanji that they come up with that they want to trick you with on the test that I wanted to go through. And I kind of want to work on that, making that more automatic, and looking for something a little different and a little bit more motivating to study instead of just kind of trying to study the kanji in a rather abstract way individually. And since I already use Memrise, I wanted to use something that utilized Memrise as well. Memrise is a website. It's kind of like a Anki or something. It's a spaced repetition system, but the advantage of Memrise, and that's memrise.com, is that the community contributes mnemonics, and so you can kind of learn from other people, kind of borrow from their creativity to help you memorize vocabulary. And so it's really useful, and I'm already using it. So kind of what I started to do is group the kanji that I'm trying to learn into groups, and then from those adding all the words that particular kanji is commonly used in, that use the common pronunciation of that kanji. And that sounds a little bit confusing. It's hard to explain. But if you want to see what an example of what I'm talking about, the list should be up at the Memrise site by the time this podcast comes out. There'll be a link in the blog post for this particular episode 116, that you can click through and check out the N3 deck, which is the first one I'm building. I'd like to make an N5 deck that's probably coming fairly soon once I get going with the N3 deck, but right now I want to know the N3 kanji, so that's the one that I started on. So I'll probably write up a blog post real quick, kind of detailing how everything's separated out. So stay tuned and keep checking the website for that. Also, looking at just doing some more listening practice, because a lot of my time during the day I spend walking to places, standing in the train sometimes, waiting for the train. And I wanted to get something a little bit more hands-free to study with. What I was doing was re-listening to old drill CDs, CDs full of N1 listening exercises, to get used to the speaking patterns and what they were talking about, and discourse markers and things like that while I was walking around. But I got to a point where I almost memorized all of the exercises that I had done already. So I needed a little bit something different, some kind of different material to work with. And so started to look back into listening to Japanese podcasts, podcasts made for natives, Japanese people, not Japanese learning podcasts. And my biggest issue with Japanese native podcasts has always been that they're not very well produced. A lot of them are poorly produced. I don't entirely understand the reason for that, but so, for example, there'll be a pretty good podcast about something interesting, like a business or culture or whatnot. But they'll have paper shuffling sounds and people taking pictures of them while they're recording it. There was a pretty good podcast about culture, but it was a little distracting with papers. They were shuffling papers or something, and it was kind of disappointing because it's from a major major radio studio, TBS Broadcasting, which is Tokyo Broadcasting. It's a pretty big broadcasting station, and they were putting out some poorly produced material. The other thing was there's a few amateur podcasts that have music in the background for the entire podcast. some of that time the music has like lyrics, so it's kind of hard to pay attention to what is being said. There's someone singing and then there's someone talking at the same time. So it's really difficult to find something that's actually well produced, has good music, is well recorded, doesn't have a bunch of people shuffling papers around, which is a little unfortunate. It's getting better. When I first started looking for podcasts, there weren't very many options, but now it's gotten a lot better. But I did manage to find a few nice gems, though. One podcast that I've been listening to fairly recently is one called Zabois, as in The Voice. It's a show where they say pick up 7 different news items. They give a quick summary of whatever the news item is, and then there's a commentator that comments on that, gives a little bit of background to it. This podcast usually goes over some rather political issues, like North Korea, disputes with China, the current situation with the Fukushima incident with the nuclear power plants, and also with Abenomics, which is the new economic plan by Shinzo Abe, who is the current prime minister of Japan. They kind of go over those different issues. So it's interesting if you're interested in Japanese politics and the current kind of situation in Japan of some critical issues. It is very difficult to follow. I'm not going to pretend like I understand absolutely everything of these podcasts, because I don't, but I can, at my level, which I would say is, you know, between N2 and N1, probably not quite N1 yet, at my level, I can understand the main points, understand the main part of the story and some of the main things that the commentator says, but a lot of the things I usually have to double check or look up in a news article or something later if I'm interested. But it's pretty good if you are interested in wanting to know about Japan, if you're wanting to listen to news, which news, and on top of that, there's news Japanese, which is very structured, full of kanji, kind of shortened down language. Plus, there's a commentator, which is more spoken Japanese, more conversational, a little bit easier to understand than the kind of written, structured Japanese, news Japanese. Same with English. If you watch a news story in English, it's very structured, it's well written, and so the words aren't as easy to understand as something that's just kind of done off the cuff. So it's kind of a good blend of those two things, news and some conversation about that particular news item, which is why I like it. Really difficult, but kind of interesting to listen to. Another podcast that I found interesting and very bite-sized is one called Frato Sanjugo. In my home, my life, or in Japanese, I guess, my home, my life, which is basically a weekly PSA in the form of a radio drama. For those of you who aren't buying a house in Japan, which is probably the vast majority of you, flat 35 is a type of loan, housing loan in Japan, where if you you can get a loan, you don't have to pay anything down, and they give you a flat rate up to 35 years, hence the name flat 35. And it's kind of a long story, but it's kind of subsidized kind of by the government. It's a lot more complicated than that, but it's basically a way for people to get affordable housing and keep that affordable housing and not lose it when interest rates go up or fluctuate in some way. Gives you a nice flat rate on your house loan. So it's generally a PSA just to kind of advertise that. Go out and get it. And it's a story about a young married couple, and they're looking for a house, and they're going through issues with houses, and people are giving them different advice on how to get a house loan and how to finance and think about those kinds of things. And it's pretty straightforward. It's a PSA. There's no complicated plot lines or anything. And it's very bite-sized. I think the podcasts are about 2.5 minutes a piece, so very easy to listen and re-listen to and get all the details out of. Not something really long and difficult to, you know, rewind and play again. So if you're interested in a kind of a drama, then that would be good. It's of course it's about, you know, young family buying a house. Might not be your thing, but it's interesting. I'll have a link to both of those podcasts in this the blog post for this particular podcast on the main site at jlptbootcamp.com. So you can check those out and get those on the podcast. I also wrote up a blog post a while back about how to sign up for podcasts from Japan. You don't need a Japanese iTunes account. You don't need to pay anything or get a Japanese iTunes card. You just have to change the store and you can start getting podcasts from Japan. And one final note, this next week coming up, it is the July test, which I have signed up for. And I'm going to take at Kyoto University again. And I feel like I'm in a bit of the same situation as last time, which is, I don't know. I've made progress. I feel like my reading speed has improved, and I've with the JLPT, and I've gotten a little bit better with comprehension. The problem is I still keep making stupid mistakes with reading. I'll either misread the question, misread some key kanji somewhere, or a grammar structure. I'll interpret it slightly the wrong way, out of context or whatnot, and just be careless with the reading. I'm trying to hit this good blend of speed and comprehension, and it's really difficult at the N1 level. A lot of people that I have talked to, it's either talking to people that take N1 and have passed N1. There's basically two types of people. There's people that read, scientific journals in Japanese a lot, and so, you know, when they go to take the test, it's a lot easier. The reading's a lot easier. They're very used to reading very difficult Japanese, and so they'll. I've met and talked to a few people that have gotten Monten. They've gotten full scores on N1 just because they have so much exposure to really difficult Japanese. And there seems to be another group of people that have passed the N1 that it's a matter of luck. Things kind of matching up. Maybe the topic is something that they're familiar with, and that they kind of understand the philosophy behind it. And so it's a lot easier for them to answer the questions. So it's feeling like that. Sometimes I'll go through some reading exercises. I'll go through a long comprehension question. I'll get all four of them right. Then I'll turn around and do another long comprehension question passage and get only one out of four questions right. So it's a real crapshoot with reading. So I'm hoping I get some topics that I am familiar with on this July test. Anyway, I really haven't been seriously studying specifically for the test. I've been doing a little bit more natural studying, not really focused on drilling or doing too many exercises. I do some exercises that focus on my weaknesses, which is kind of understanding the grammar and reading. But I've turned to doing a little bit more natural study, just conversation practice and reading a lot of different blogs, doing some freelance translation these days that has helped me get some exposure to a couple of different styles of writing, even being exposed to incorrect Japanese when some people kind of write in shorthand that I need to translate. So that's hopefully going to help with this test. But anyway, I'll definitely post the results on the blog, so stay tuned, and I'll let you know what works and what doesn't. Anyway, I'm looking forward to it, seeing how what's improved, what's not improved, and just with no pressure and seeing what's what happens. And I'm also looking forward to learning about everyone's results, how they did, how you did on the test. So if you are taking the July test wherever you happen to be, in Japan or most of Asia, I believe, is where they are. They have the test. I think New Zealand is lucky they get the July test, and India gets the July test, and a few parts of Europe get the July test that you can take. So if you're in any of those regions, good luck. And I'd love to hear from you as soon as the test is over on the blog. Come visit me, jlptbootcamp.com. Of course, I love to hear your comments on this particular podcast. This is podcast episode 116 on the website. You can leave me a comment for this podcast, or you can click on the Contact Me button, contact me that way. Or, of course, there's always old-fashioned email. That is mac@jlptbootcamp.com. I'd love to hear from you any of those three ways. And until next week, have a great week studying. To claim your free 21-page ebook on the 5 biggest mistakes people make on the JLPT, as well as more tips and tricks to help you pass the Japanese language proficiency test, come visit me at jlptbootcamp.com.